and social justice.
And composure. I'm poster, proposer, toaster, players on every coaster. Deliver a roller coaster. Mind bitter, set up watching these sucker MCs. I'm seeing just how they lying to the general population. Don't be patient, up and stand up for your life. Don't you real understand we lost some rights at 119? Come dumb, come young, come blind, unwind, confined to the situation we facing, cause it's time. Tick, tick, boom. America, you got fucked. The media shut the job, now we stuck. Damn. Was it full of leaps and blunders? Did they ever find him some? And why in the fuck did Daniel Pearl have to pay the price for his life and his wife playing twice? See, Alameen got life and Fred got dead. Hampton to dab in the dream of all the Panthers. They got the answer for ransom as we breathe together, as we clean together. Count your blessing whenever you feel that things won't be no better, but it got to. He gave me this microphone, so I must rock you. Your brainwaves, airwaves, energize and shock you. Y'all got me when I got y'all. Long as I know y'all listening, I'm always bring food for thought to the table in the kitchen. Now eat, nigga, eat, nigga, eat, nigga, eat, nigga, eat, nigga.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. Tonight's program will feature two members of the steering committee of Chico's Concerned Citizens for Justice.
We opened the show with Outcast. War was the name of the track. George Gold and Marty Dunlap are members of the steering committee of Concerned Citizens for Justice, which was formed after the killing of Desmond Phillips by police officers and continues its work for police reform in the wake of protests over the death of George Floyd.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Corona, the Corona Conscious Chico Certified Farmers Markets, with year-round markets on Wednesday mornings at the North Valley Plaza and on Saturday mornings at 3rd and Wall in downtown Chico. The Chico Certified Farmers Markets, connecting farmers and food lovers since 1980.
The opinions voiced on Ecotopia do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. We'll take a short break now and be back to talk with Marty Dunlap and George Gold.
I see the kids in the street, but not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them? Disregard a broken bottle top and a one-man soul. They follow each other on the wind, you know, cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one yet to know. I'm starting with the man in the mirror.
That was Michael Jackson, Man in the Middle. This is Ecotopia on KZFR. I'm Susan Chudy. Tonight, our guests are George Gold and Marty Dunlap, members of the steering committee of the Concerned Citizens for Justice, which is advocating a variety of reforms in policing. This has been a vital topic for discussion for many years, but is especially focused after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis and widespread expression of anger locally and globally.
And I'm Stephen Chudy. This program is part of Ecotopia's new series entitled Radical Change. We're inviting our guests to give us their best vision of what's required to bring about paradigm shifts in our culture and in our behavior. We're kind of offering them a blank check to give us their best, even idealistic visions of how our world needs to change. I want to welcome George Gold and Marty Dunlap.
Hi.
Good evening.
Got you both there? Good.
We're both here.
Okay, great.
Let's start with a little bit of background, please. Tell us about Concerned Citizens for Justice, how you came to be formed, and what you've been doing since the inception of this group.
So, Concerned Citizens for Justice began in 2017 in response to the police shooting death of a young man having a mental health episode in Chico. A group of people came together, citizens, concerned about this use of force that seemed to be somewhat extreme given the situation. CC4J then formed, and that's our abbreviation, CC4J, as we promote a culture that preserves human life, reduces the use of force, values the dignity of all, and includes citizen participation in establishing the policing needs of our community.
We'll talk. Go ahead.
Just in summary, from me, that our focus is transparency and accountability of law enforcement, and we believe a transformation of law enforcement is needed in our country.
And what's your membership look like? You have meetings, you've done a couple of demonstrations and so forth. Give us a little more, please, on...
We're a growing group. We started out with a very focused group of people, and people have come and gone, but basically we have started a coalition. So we now have about 40 different signatories, both groups, local groups, as well as well-known citizens who carry respect in our community as our coalition group. But as a working group, we are around 20 members.
Mm-hmm. Have you been out as part of the protests in City Plaza in recent weeks or been otherwise engaged?
We have. We actually were part of the vigil, the first vigil after George Floyd was killed, that was at the corner of 3rd and Main. And then in the subsequent different gatherings, we have usually had a present and been a speaker at those.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we need to know a little bit more about what's going on with policing in Chico. So maybe we could learn a little bit about the police department, the budget statistics. And I'm really interested in hearing, in addition, how CC4J stands on defunding.
Let's have George go first, telling us about the budget.
Okay, George.
Yeah. Before I get to the budget figures, I just wanted to mention that in my view today, we have really two pandemics, not just one. Clearly, we have COVID-19 pandemic wreaking havoc on our day-to-day life. But there's really another pandemic that is running rampant in our society, and it's not just other cities across the United States, but right here in Chico. And that pandemic is the excessive use of force for our police departments. Every day we're reminded of how important it is for each of us to wear a mask and follow other guidelines to help address COVID-19. And now it's also time to do something about our police department's use of excessive and deadly force right here in Chico. We must talk about not how to adjust, not how to reform, but how to completely change the way our police department functions at every level. This effort must be a complete systemic examination of and to change all aspects of how our police function. It's time to change now, right now, before the next shooting of an unarmed citizen. So we're going to be mentioning a fair amount of statistics and studies. And I just want to say that all this information can be found either on our website or on our Facebook page. And you can easily find our website by using your favorite search engine and just search on CC4J, CC and the number 4J, space Chico. Our website will display at the top of your search results. So you asked about the budget.
Mm-hmm.
In Chico, we have, I'm going to list just six major city departments. Community Development, $1 million. Parks and Rec, $3 million. Public Works, $4 million. General Government, $6 million. Fire, $13 million. And the police budget, $27 million.
Wow.
Just for a city of 95,000. That means the police budget takes up 50% of the entire city budget. I see that as a problem, a significant problem, because we're investing in the police instead of investing in health management, community service. And what we're finding is the police use a militaristic approach of coercion into submission by misbehaving militaristic police.
Could you clarify a little more, George, militaristic? We know a little bit about some of the assault-type equipment that has been purchased in our county in recent years. Tell us how that contributes to the militaristic approach that the police may take.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we like to see is that if you study police departments around the country, Australia, Sweden, anywhere you want to go, the police officers have to be guardians, not warriors. They need to be warriors like 0.1% of the time when there's some situation that requires them to act like warriors. But when they dress like warriors and wear military garb and are armed to the teeth with all kinds of different weapons, then they begin to act like that. It's a menu for disaster. The city has to undertake a change in recruiting police officers. The new source of recruits should come from people who study sociology, psychology, health sciences, social sciences. We have to stop thinking about crime as an excuse for more money and a way to control our citizens, but rather we should think about how we can all participate in our democracy. We have to think about how we can create a society of self-actualizing human beings full of love and joy, and that goes for the cops too.
There's a lot of talk, of course, about defunding police departments. I don't know if CC4J has an official position on that. My own belief is that it was a poorly chosen term because it has excited all kinds of conservative response about, well, you're going to throw away the police. Who's going to protect us? But what's your view on defunding as opposed to, say, reapportioning the way the city sends its money or other options that are out there?
So I'll respond to that. I agree with you, Stephen. Defunding is a pretty powerful word, and I think what it represents is a loud statement from the public demanding a change.
Mm-hmm.
CC4J... is still formulating our position on that, but basically what we are discussing is shifting money from the police budget, the 50% of the city budget, to other social services that really are necessary in a lot of the different types of police activities, so that there are other well-trained entities that are dealing with some of the situations, and they also are funded well for providing those types of services.
Steve, you know, from 1994 to 2017, the homicide rate, just as an example, decreased 32%, and yet police budgets rose 46%. What's wrong with this picture?
I am interested in what you said at the very beginning, George, about we need to rebuild from the ground up. And I think that one of the problems that we have, and I think it's something that we need to really get a lot better at is people have no idea how black people in particular, but also Hispanic people, how the police treat them. They have, you know, maybe they get snippets of information about, you know, people being racially profiled and stopped. But there are so many stories out there. And I've been kind of gorging on podcasts about African Americans and their stories about, you know, being stopped for no cause and being seen as suspicious. I mean, it seems that if we're starting from the ground up, one of the things that needs to happen is that people need to have a much clearer understanding of racism, which is at the base of a lot of police brutality and what unfair practices. That was a mild way to say that.
You know, on the surface, I agree with you. Certainly, since George Floyd has been killed in Minnesota, the issue of race is even more prevalent than before. But in reality, over the years, nothing has changed.
Right.
It only gets worse. You can go back to 1919. I have it here somewhere, police were involved in what can only be classified as police riots. And you can bring it up to Rodney King. You can bring it up to George Floyd. The issue is the militarization and the manner in which the police interact with our citizenry, whether they're black, brown, or white. It doesn't matter. It matters, but their conduct is based on their militarism and the command and control mindset of cops on the street. That's what has to change. There's a guy named Dave Grossman, and he's a trainer for police departments, and he's invented this world called killology. And you can see his videos on YouTube anytime you want. And in 1964, Potter Stewart was involved, Supreme Court Justice was involved in obscenity cases, and then it was really big. And he kind of coined the phrase about obscenity, "I know it when I see it."
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, I have watched a couple of Dave Grossman's videos. They are obscene. And he tells cops that if you're not ready to kill at the beginning of your shift, you should get another job.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
These kinds of training paradigms and orientations are shocking. And let me bring it back closer. I was at a meeting about 3 months ago, and I was sitting next to a highway patrol officer. And I had either just learned about Dave Grossman or it was at the top of my brain. And I asked her, I said, "Hey, have you ever taken a course from Dave Grossman?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "What did you think of it?" And she said, "I thought it was really good." That's frightening. Absolutely frightening.
AB 392 is supposed to reform things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So let me tell you a little bit about that particular law. That is a California law that came into effect in 2020. And it's redefining the circumstances when homicide by a peace officer is deemed justifiable. Deadly force only should be used when necessary in defense of human life. Other available resources need to be exercised first. The officer needs to evaluate the situation carefully and thoroughly before using deadly force. Individuals with physical, mental health, developmental, or intellectual disabilities need to be considered thoroughly as these individuals' abilities to understand or comply with commands from peace officers can be compromised. Reasonable force should be utilized to bring about an arrest, prevent escape, or overcome resistance. Deadly force is justified only when the officer reasonably believes, based on the totality of the circumstances, that such force is necessary to defend against an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury to the officer or another person. I think George is going to talk a little bit more about that, but this reduction in use of force is new, and we're waiting to see how this is going to play out, particularly in our community of Chico.
Mm-hmm.
George, do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Well, you know, we have three new laws.
Right, let's talk about
every police department in
George,
California,
how about telling us about some examples of when we've had use of force that was extreme in our community?
Sure, I can do that. If you go to our website, well, first of all, let's go back a second. All you have to do is think about Tyler Rushing and Desmond Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
Two people that were killed by police right here in Chico. But let's look at something where people can see for themselves. In 2018, there was an 8-year-old boy here in Chico who was having some kind of mental difficulties. Remember, 8 years old. And the video on our website will show you that this 8-year-old boy has been handcuffed, sitting on the sidewalk with his hands cuffed behind him, crying uncontrollably, with 6 or 8 police officers from all different agencies standing around the boy, not doing anything. A passerby can be heard on the video saying, "Please take the handcuffs off. Why can't you take the handcuffs off?" And the cop who put them on said, "I can't take them off." Watching this video is absolutely heartbreaking. It's shocking. You can look at a video of last year, 11-year-old girl, 11 years old, in Bidwell Park, being chased, tackled, and sat on by half a dozen cops in Bidwell Park doing a welfare check. These are cops that you cannot think only one thing. You can only think one thing when you watch the video. These guys are out of control, completely out of control. So one of the challenges for any police officer is you have to be able to control your emotions. You won't have me being a cop. Sometimes I can't. I'm too emotional. I'm too passionate. I'm not material for a cop. But you can't be a cop if you don't know how to control your emotions, if you don't understand what de-escalation is, if you don't contradict what you've been taught, which is command and control. So I want to take a second to think about what is command and control. And you can see videos, hundreds of them on YouTube, with these cops who are pulling someone over for a speeding ticket, and they say, "Get out of the car." And if they don't get out of the car instantly, then they're muscled out of the car. I have seen cops stick their hand through the window and grab a cell phone because somebody's either trying to video them or talking on the cell phone. This issue of immediate response to a command is absurd. And those are one of the things that has to change. We have to have guardians, not warriors, on the street.
I have to say, I think I'm perhaps a little more conservative than some of my friends. I'm very empathetic to the position in which cops find themselves when they're forced to make a really rapid decision about what might be a life-threatening a threat to their lives personally. And that seems to me extraordinarily difficult. And I quite understand, George, when you talk about people being out of control. It also seems to me, personally, to be in control in that kind of situation is extraordinarily difficult. Although at the same time, I also think that backing off may be a better solution than making the decision at the moment. So that's just a...
Steve, yeah. I would ask you, Steve, how are police officers threatened by an 8-year-old boy?
Right, of course.
An 11-year-old girl.
Yeah.
So those situations, and I said this to Chief O'Brien about 2 years ago when I was at a meeting and he was talking about this. Sometimes we have 3 seconds to make a decision. I hear you. I hear him. The problem is that those situations occur in the lifetime of an officer less than 1% of the time of their public interaction.
Yes.
But if you watch some of these other officers, it's like their life is being threatened by an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
Right.
I want to continue to talk about the other laws that are trying to make efforts for change. And I'm wondering if you think that these are steps in the right direction, or does the change need to be, first, I think you need to talk about the laws, but does it need to be more radical? And in fact, can the current police force, as it's constituted, comply?
Go ahead and talk about those two other laws that George was referencing. Mm-hmm. Both of these also went into effect in 2020. The first of these, SB 1421, addresses the release of records under the California Public Records Act. The legislature believes that given the scope of the powers vested in police officers, the public has a right to know all about police misconduct, as well as officer-involved shootings and other serious uses of force. This includes officers' violations of civilians' rights and inquiries into deadly use of force incidents, because these actions can undercut the public's faith in the legitimacy of law enforcement, undermining the ability of thousands of hardworking peace officers to do their jobs, and endangers public safety. So this particular one has to do with releasing this information to the public so that we know who are some of the bad officers as opposed to the ones that are doing a good job out there. The other law that I want to just talk about is SB 978, also in effect this year. And this legislation requires law enforcement agencies to conspicuously post on their websites all current standards, policies, practices, operating procedures, and education and training manuals that would be otherwise available to the public if a request was made pursuant to the California Public Records Act. The legislature further declared that law enforcement agencies need to establish standards of physical, mental, and moral fitness for peace officers and develop and implement programs that will increase the effectiveness of law enforcement, including the provision of ongoing education and training. These regulations should be based on best policing policies and practices, current legal standards, and community safety needs. So, whether or not we think these will be adequate, that is something that we are not sure about at this point. But I'm going to let George go ahead now and respond to his thoughts regarding transparency and accountability.
I think that has to be the cornerstone of what we need to begin to change in the police department, and that's accountability and transparency. Last year, I made a PRA, which is a Public Records Act request. It's a California request, in contrast to being an FOIA, which is a Federal Freedom of Information Act request. And I made the request for the police report of the 11-year-old girl that was tackled in Bidwell Park. And as a matter of routine, I got a 3-page letter from the city attorney saying why they can't give me a copy of the record.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, she's a minor, so I understand that. So redact those things that apply to her being a minor. But why not provide the public with a transparent way of allowing the public to understand what happened in the park, why they acted that way? And that's what, again, there's this paradigm in the Chico Police Department that says, we're in charge here, you're just a citizen. That's not how it works. They work for us. They work for the city. So that's why we need oversight, civilian oversight, in Chico or the Chico Police Department. I just want to mention one thing before I forget. You know, in 2019, across the country, 228 police officers committed suicide. So far in 2020, 70 have committed suicide. This is shocking.
Yes, yes.
And the care and support of police officers without stigmatization is just as important as all these other changes.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to be the best people, the best men and women that they can be. And it's clear that these numbers that are growing, in 2018 it was 174, 2019, 228, just terrible. This shocks the conscience.
I wanted to ask one more question about negative control. In the halls of Congress at the moment, the House of Reps is talking about a national database that would report police officers who've been accused in various ways of misbehavior, inappropriate behavior. Do you see any hope coming from the halls of Congress along these lines? I mean, whether this could even get through the Republican Senate is debatable, but are there national measures such as that would be helpful in transparency and accountability?
Well, looking at this new bill that's being introduced, the mandatory of reporting of deadly force to DOJ and maybe other misconduct, I mean, it certainly would make it more available and accessible to the public and also to departments who are, researching new hires for their area.
Yes.
George has some thoughts, though, about some of the DOJ or the other information that's available.
You know, one of the things that we have to remember is a fair amount of open discussion among those of us that are trying to make for more peaceful, more compassionate, more sensitive police departments. And that is, it's my view that when you come right down to it, we all function on this planet based on our personal behavior. Many years ago when I was a school teacher, the term behavior modification was like a big deal, and it was
yes.
a thing to do. You know, you had a kid misbehave in class, you have to learn how to deflect and do behavior modification. Well, I have this idea that I think every police officer in the country has a moral imperative to speak up. To speak up when they're in the middle of a situation where an officer is misbehaving or using unnecessary force.
Mm-hmm.
Just watch the video of George Floyd.
Yes.
Yes.
It is absolutely shocking to see the other two cops standing there doing nothing. So if you have a police department of 1,000 police officers and 10 of them are what police departments are talking about, saying they're bad apples, well, they're bad apples because the others aren't saying anything. So you have 1,010 bad cops as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So you can pass all the legislation you want.
Yes.
And you can even get all the training you want.
Yes.
But police officers have to understand they have a moral imperative. They have a moral imperative to act in a civil way and to care about not just their blue officers in blue, but to the entire population.
Mm-hmm.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and we're speaking with Marty Dunlap and George Gold of Concerned Citizens for Justice about radical change for policing and social justice. We've touched on reduction of force as well as transparency and accountability for police officers. Let's turn now to some of your recommendations for changing the culture of policing, which is what you were just talking about, George. That seems like a huge necessary change in policing.
So let me just speak first about increased training. We hear a lot of talk now after the incident that has come forward with George Floyd's death about increasing money for training. And what we have found is that, well, there can be more training for implicit bias and de-escalating behaviors, but that increased training will not necessarily translate into a change in behavior. We've had a discussion, CC4J, with Chico Police Department officers, and they feel they've had enough training. They don't need mm-hmm. more training in these areas necessarily. What we're realizing in our discussions is that we need to see demonstration of this training on the job. We need to see a change in behavior. And as George was mentioning, with a change in behavior, as we know, you're either going to be positively or negatively reinforced for that behavior, and that hopefully will translate to a change. So some of the things that we're thinking about are, well, what if we try to reward people who demonstrate on the job de-escalation tactics as opposed to being more aggressive? Would those be rewarded in ways that officers could accumulate points towards salary increases or promotion? Or would we want to go more towards a punishment, towards the negative reinforcement where they're being fined or they're not going to be getting negative points and they wouldn't be up for promotion? We're not really sure, I don't know if anyone is, what's going to work best, but we do know that we need a change of behavior, and reinforcement, negative and positive, does seem to be something that brings about change.
But for me, I want to add that, I spoke to Chief O'Brien about training, and he claimed that every one of his officers has taken de-escalation training. But do you know that the average police department spends 168 hours of training new recruits on firearms, self-defense, and use of force tactics? It spends 9 hours on conflict management and mediation. Mm-hmm. If you look at the scales of justice, that's not a balance. We have to have an increase and substantial increase and change this paradigm.
Yes.
Officers getting specialized and important and repeated training on de-escalation and CIT. So that they have to understand that de-escalation is the first response, not the last response. Pulling your gun out is the very last desperate response. And these days, whether it's in Chico or in Minneapolis, it seems to be the first response.
The culture of policing has a long tradition, and it's a very tight culture. And training in some of the things that I've been reading lately is often just ridiculed by officers, you know, training in new ways of thinking about things. The culture is so entrenched. And how do you break through with new attitudes? You just said a paradigm shift. How do you get a paradigm shift in the attitudes and thinking of a police culture that's so entrenched?
Well, I think one of the ways, I mean, the shift in culture is huge, but one of the ways is to bring the community, citizens, more involved into the community policing so that they are part of the discussion, that they are part of what's going on. The breaking down the blue shield and the protectiveness of each other, that's a tough one because that's something that's been going on for a long time. In our country in particular.
Yes.
But we believe citizen oversight of law enforcement is probably a necessary and important step in bringing about a change in police culture. I just wanted to mention before we go too far with citizen oversight being a watchful and responsible care, a careful watching. Improvement of our law enforcement requires citizen oversight. An independent, impartial citizen board with the authority to review all police files is essential. As in other cities, this board will review incidents of police use of force. They will hear citizens' complaints, recommend disciplinary action when necessary, and assess and recommend improvements to police policy. The board will operate transparently and issue its findings publicly. Its members will reflect the diversity of our community. Members of a board may be appointed by elected officials or elected directly by the voters. So to bring about a change, even though it seems a very different way, it seems that this paradigm shift would involve citizen oversight of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Both of you have talked about... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to mention that you asked for how can we change this. So I agree with everything that my friend Marty has said. I would offer that there's another avenue that can help with transparency and can help with misbehaving police officers, and that is working in tandem with civilian oversight as an independent police auditor. Last year, I interviewed the police auditor for Eugene, Oregon, and for Davis, California. And I'm not an expert on police auditors, but I have to tell you, I was very impressed with these individuals and what they do and how they do it.
So what did they do? Could you explain that a little bit more?
Independent police auditor. So they have direct communication, usually with the city council. Depending on what type of government you have, it could be the city manager, the police department, and the public. They have the right to request and review any and all police personnel records, whether it's for routine, maybe too much drinking on the job or whatever, emotional issues, as well as any kind of shootings or excessive use of force or any use of force. And my discussions with those two individuals was just very, very interesting, and I think it could be a real help. And what struck me was that I mentioned this once to Chief O'Brien, and the comment was, how much is it? And I said, I understand it's between $80,000 and $100,000 a year. And out of a $27 million budget,
yeah.
This department it's can't nothing. Afford that? Give me a break.
Yeah.
I was thinking, too, as you spoke, I've read a lot about proposals of putting social workers on police response teams. That, too, is expensive. But having people who are skilled in things like de-escalation, who are not necessarily part of the police force. Do you have any response to that or thoughts about how that kind of casual supervision could work?
I don't know about how casual it would be. But,
good, yes.
the police department has tried to make an effort in bringing in a behavioral force team, but we feel that shifting of monies to more personnel that are trained in those areas probably is one of the most effective ways to bringing about the de-escalation. Especially, I want to mention that the three vulnerable populations that I think really need attention are people of color,
yes,
the mentally challenged in our communities, as well as the unhoused peoples of our communities.
Yes.
And those people all need to have a support network of social services that are helping them, especially in ways that they're bumping up with our police department personnel.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier, George, and I can't remember, you said something about it as well, Marty, is the number of people officers who've committed suicide and the kind of stresses on police officers. Is there a need to have more support and mental health care for police officers?
So let me go ahead and respond first, and I'd say that's an unequivocal yes. We believe our police are essential. We know that police work can be both dangerous and stressful, and that first responders have higher levels of post-traumatic stress than the general public. Therefore, full mental health support must be available for officers and first responders whenever needed and encouraged following any severe crisis situation. Counseling must be mandatory following discharge of a weapon or any use of force incident to ensure the mental health of the officer and the safety of the public. Law enforcement personnel involved in use of force incidents must live with the consequences of their actions, thus addressing such situations with adequate therapeutic intervention is imperative. So regarding, and I should tell you that CC4J has developed these focus points, these six focus points that have been very well honed, and I'm touching into some of these as we're speaking, but that is the one for support and care of officers. And it does seem to be a critical thing in terms of the amount of stress and the amount of suicides, as George was mentioning. You had asked about, I had mentioned the stigmatization, and that is officers seeking out mental health intervention. We've just heard that there's some proposed legislation that information could be used to not necessarily support the officer, but maybe used to stigmatize them. And we're very concerned that there is no backlash for officers seeking out that type of care when they... It's only going to be a benefit for them and for the public.
Again, I think part of the... I'm kind of harping on this, but I think part of the police culture is you do have to be tough and you do have to, you know, suck it up, I guess, in some cases. And so how to get to that place where it's not a bad thing to get help, you know, that's another need for kind of a paradigm shift, I think.
But Susan, part of that comes from the history of police departments.
Mm-hmm.
The history of police departments over time, certainly in this country, has been that they're an offshoot of the military.
Yes.
I mean, why do we call them chief, lieutenant, captain?
Yes.
There's a paramilitary paradigm that started decades ago in this country, and that's what has to change. Mm-hmm. About 6% of the United States population serves in the military. Yet they make up about 26% of police departments. That's not healthy.
Mm-mm.
Because the military training is being reemphasized in terms of a police department. And I would rather see people like Cherry Maples, who was a student of Buddhism, of Thich Nhat Hanh.
Mm-hmm.
And she has gone around the country teaching what she calls a Buddhist cop's approach to justice.
Mm-hmm.
These are optimistic and positive approaches to teaching police officers how to get along in our society. We have to change this military paradigm in our police departments. We don't need them to be militaristic. We don't want them to be militaristic.
Mm-mm.
We have tiny towns. There's a tiny town in Delaware that has an MRAP. An MRAP is one of these armored vehicles in this town of 12,000. Because they got the equipment from the Department of Defense for free. I mean, the problem in our society is if you look at the last month of all the demonstrations and all the gatherings that have been going on around the country, all about police use of force, and the result of those demonstrations is increased use of support, attacking demonstrators, shooting them with... stuff, I forget what it's called, and just unqualified violence against demonstrators. So let's look at a positive side. I attended two gatherings here in Butte County, one in Orville and one in City Plaza. I walked in Orville with D.A. Ramsey and Sheriff Honig.
Mm.
They walked the route. There were no cops. I mean, they were the only cops. Maybe there were others. There was no confrontation. There was no violence. This is a positive step.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure they keep doing that. But it's not just demonstrations. It's these one-on-one interactions where the command and control mindset and actions are really detrimental both to the cops and to the people they're attacking.
Chico is about to hire a new police chief. Is there a role for CC4J in that selection process? And how would you like to see the new chief chosen?
So yes, CC4J has been active. As soon as we saw the retirement notice go out for Chief O'Brien, we got involved and started communicating with the city council members as well as city staff. And we have been playing an active role. And so, yes, it is true that will be one of the important factors in bringing about transformation. But not necessarily the sole one. I want to talk about that in just a bit. But we have been communicating with the city manager, Mark Orme, about and communicating also with the city council at the same time, that we think it's very important that thorough background checks are made of each candidate for the new police chief position. And two things that we have talked about is that there's a growing movement among community towards community policing and a demilitarization of law enforcement amounting to a change in police culture. Does the candidate demonstrate an openness to improvement of our police culture? And another question that we want to go into the background checks of the new police chief, does the candidate have a history or pattern of overlooking the use of excessive force or implicit bias while in a supervisory capacity? There's two other questions that we have put forward, and we do want to make sure that these other aspects of the importance of who we bring in into this position are going to be paid attention to by the not only the city manager as part of his process, but also to the extent that there is a hiring panel. CC4J has asked to be on the hiring panel. Things have been put on hold, as you know, due to the pandemic, and an interim police chief is now in place. But we are hoping that as we go forward and there is a more free opportunity to meet with individuals, that these thorough background checks happen, as well as we've developed some sample questions or questions that we think are very important, and some of these have to do with the extent to which the person has experience with the 21st century policing, NACOL, which is the National Association of Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement, the extent to which they're aware of these things, they participate, and then also the kind of relationship they have with police unions, because we believe they are so important in bringing about a change in police culture.
We just have a couple of minutes left, George Gold and Marty Dunlap. We wonder if you could take just a couple of moments and maybe blue sky it a little bit. What's your best vision of what can happen with policing in Chico over the foreseeable future, the next few years, 5 years, 10 years?
Marty was saying we need to make sure that the process of hiring a police chief is transparent, that there's participation with community groups.
Yes.
That's what's important. We want transparency and to be able to make a contribution and to be part of the process. They need to let the citizens of Chico participate.
And some of the things that I think are important that CC4J is really stressing is that the city council is involved, city staff, to bring about transformation. CC4J has been working on an action plan that we're going to be submitting to the city that we think is going to be important, but police chief is critical, the police union is critical. My own feeling is two things. One is, who's the best equipped to provide the needed support for officers? Is it the police chief? Is it the police union? Is it the city manager? How do we make sure that our officers have the support and the care that they need to be able to work effectively in a less intense, stressful way? But more important than that is, with all these different laws that are coming forward, Chico, I think, can create change locally, rather than waiting for the federal government or waiting for the state government to impose things. But I think we can move forward as a community to bring about change in our culture locally that is going to much better meet the needs of our community.
We literally have 1 minute. Can you tell people how they can become involved in CC4J, a website? And you mentioned it, but could you mention it again? And we'll post it on our website.
Happy to. First, let me just quickly say we're looking for a police chief that has sensitivity, some humility, and some compassion for everyone. If you do, use your favorite search engine. Just search for CC4J space Chico. Our website will be the first at the very top of your list, and you can find us there. There's a contact page. You can get to our Facebook page and look in our reference library if you want to read and learn.
Well, I wish we had more time because this is such an important topic. Our guests on Nicotopia this evening have been Marty Dunlap and George Gold, members of the Steering Committee of Concerned Citizens for Justice. I think we should all go to their webpage and see how we can be supportive. Thank you for your on-the-ground work here in Chico. as well as your articulate visions for radical change. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR, Chico, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, technological. We hope you're enjoying and appreciating our new series of programs on radical change. We welcome your suggestions for additional topics and guests. You can contact us at ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. We also encourage you to visit our website for notes and recordings of our recent programs, plus our resource list, including the website for CC4J. And we're pleased to announce that as early as next week, we'll be podcasting, something long overdue for Ecotopia, and you'll be able to pick us up and share us with other people that way. The web address is ecotopiakzfr.com. Thank you for listening.
A roaring lion walketh about seeking whom he may devour.
Money, Jay, please turn me up.
Back to the little boom, way, what's up, boom? Take some rain, none, some rain on one, one. Rain, come shine, come rain, come on.
South side, let it bang. Outside, let it rain. Rain down on the pain. Rain down on the slain. Rain down for my mom, rain down on the farm. Shower us with your love, wash us in the blood. Drop this for the thugs, know I grew up in the mud. The top is not enough, wash us in the blood. In the blood, whole life being thugs, no choice selling drugs. South side, what it does, rain down on us. Genocide, what it does, slavery, what it does, rain down on us. Whole life selling drugs, wash us in the blood, wash us in your blood, wash us in the blood, wash us in the blood, wash us in the blood. Holy Spirit, come down. Holy Spirit, come down. Holy Spirit, help now. Holy Spirit, help. In the blood, whole life being thugs, no choice selling drugs, genocide what it does.